So about 37 years ago, my mom gave birth to my older brother. 36 years ago? 36 years ago. 15 months later, I came along. Not a whole lot of distance between the two of us. So there was just a wee bit of competitiveness. My brother was bigger than me. Always was, still is. I stand 5 foot 10-ish, 11, 10 and a half, 10 and a quarter, something. He's about 6 foot one, 6 foot two. He outweighs me by about 40 pounds. Pretty sure if he sat on me now like he used to, I might break. But we would compete in everything that we did. And in fact, we would compete so much that we began to like the same things. See, I like to go fast in everything that I do. So he would go fast and he would keep up. I would ride my bike and I'd see a corner and I'd take it as fast as I could. He'd ride his bike, he'd take the corner as fast as he could. I liked to play basketball, he liked to play basketball. I liked to play golf, he liked to play golf. All of the things that we did, we competed in everything. And then I went away to college. And when I went away to college, I went from Minnesota down to Tennessee to chase this redhead, gorgeous redhead. In case you didn't know, she's sitting here. When I was down there, he began to, his life began to change, I guess is the best way to put it. He went through some hard times, he went through some good times, and about 6 years after I went to college, I was back, my brother bought a motorcycle, okay? And I knew how he would ride his motorcycle, so my dad and I were following behind him, and we came up to, we were on Highway 169, we were going to exit onto a different road, and it was an actual entrance ramp or exit ramp. And when he got on that, I think it was labeled for 35 or 40 miles an hour, and he took the curve at 25 miles per hour, which hurt me to the core of my being, to be in a vehicle that in a car I could go faster than he was going. And all of a sudden it hit me. He wasn't the same person. See, my brother, for all of the things that I like about him, he is not competitive and adventurous like I am. He doesn't like golf. He doesn't really like basketball. In fact, I've come to find out that he likes gardening and cooking. I was playing golf with my brother-in-law this last weekend. Technically, we were just chipping around in my father-in-law's yard, but I kept trying to tell him what tree we were hitting at. And everything for me was a pine tree or an evergreen. And he's like, "You mean the fir?" I don't know. Sure, that one. I don't care what it is. It's a tree. My brother knows all of the different plants that he's planted in his garden. We have become vastly different. All of a sudden, somewhere in the middle of all that going on, he changed. Now, that was a good change. I'm glad that he went that route. I'm glad that he's now doing all the things that he's doing. It's great. But all of a sudden, circumstances were, and things were going to play out like I thought they were going to, and all of a sudden, those circumstances that I thought were going to play out in one way did not play out. He took the curve really, really slow. And in that moment, I knew things had changed. A change like that took place in John chapter 19. Jesus has now died, okay? John made that painfully obvious. He is dead. Now, he's dead because this was God's plan for him to have died so that we could put our faith in him as our means to salvation, right? That's what it was for. John even says so in the last passage. He explains Jesus' death so that we may believe. But now that he has died, life still goes on. Things still continue to happen. Passover is still coming. So, John takes us to the end of 19. After these things, we're going to start in verse 38. After these things, Joseph of Arimathea, who was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for fear of the Jews, he asked Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus, and Pilate gave him permission. So he came and took away his body. Now, Nicodemus, he also, who earlier had come to Jesus by night, came bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds in weight. So they took the body of Jesus and bound it in linen cloths and with spices, as is the burial custom of the Jews. Now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden a new tomb in which no one had yet been laid. So, because of the Jewish day of preparation, since the tomb was close at hand, they laid Jesus there. How does this story have to do with my brother's changing what he did and how he acted? How does it have to do with change at all? Remember what has just happened. Jesus didn't die, right? He was killed. Jesus wasn't killed. He was beaten and then executed. Jesus wasn't just beaten and executed. He was mocked and defrocked and defamed and everything you could think of, and then beaten, and then mocked some more, and then murdered. And now these two men come stepping forward when nobody else does, and they say, "Let us take care of his body." Why would that be significant at all? Well, think about who would have been crucified. Who was crucified? Guilty, awful criminals for whom nobody cared. So they would take their body down and they would basically dump it in a pit and they'd walk away. They would let this pit of bodies rot and decay and decompose. But Jesus was not treated that way. Why? Because Joseph and Nicodemus decided to do something different than what was normally done for people who have been crucified. Now again, why does that matter? Notice what was said about these two guys. Because there was a change that took place in this moment for these two. After these things, after Jesus died, after the legs of the thieves was broken, after Jesus was pierced, after all of that had gone on, Joseph of Arimathea, who was a disciple of Jesus. Now, we have a problem in our typical church lingo. We talk about the 12 disciples, which is a terrible misnomer. There were hundreds of disciples. There were the 12, as they were called, but there were hundreds of disciples. Some disciples walked away, if you remember back to John chapter 6. Now, these two were disciples of Jesus, or at least Joseph of Arimathea is described as a disciple of Jesus. But what? But secretly. Joseph, a disciple of Jesus, but secretly, so that nobody would know. See, secretly, there are things that I like that I don't want you to know about. Like poetry. I really like poetry. That goes against everything that you would normally think about me, but I really like poetry. I really like certain things that are really kind of ridiculous. I like leg cramps, foot cramps, calf cramps. Why? I don't know, and I can't explain. But I think they're kind of fun. See, there are things about me that I like that I don't want you to know. That's sort of what Joseph of Arimathea was like. He followed Jesus. But he didn't want anybody to know about it. Why? Why would he not want anybody to know about it? Seems pretty simple to me. They killed Jesus. So apparently it's not a very safe or good thing to be following this Jesus. So Joseph kept it quiet, so that he didn't end up like Jesus. This was even before he knew this was going to happen to Jesus. But he kept quiet because he knew people didn't like it. Nicodemus, on the other hand, Nicodemus apparently wants to know more about Jesus. So he visits Jesus at night when nobody could see him. He visits Jesus at night when nobody would know what was going on, so as to, again, hide what he's doing, what he believes, and what he thinks. These are the two men that this story is about. This story isn't about Jesus, this component of it. He's dead, and all he gets is buried in this. That's all that happens. But these two other men, Joseph and Nicodemus, they went through a transformation that changed them in this moment. And how do we know it changed them? They acted different. That's how we know something changed. If I get the little light on my engine that says it's time to change your oil, and I bring it in to the mechanic to get the oil changed, and they take a look at the car, and they say, oh, this is great. They don't touch it, and they give it back to me. The car is going to be exactly like it was. The light's still going to be on. It's still going to tell me it needs the oil changed. Until they actually physically make a change in that car, that light is going to stay on, and it's going to be just like it was. But when there's a change, there has to actually be a change. And I know that sounds simplistic, but it's true. If something's going to change, it has to actually change. Now, as believers, we have a little bit of an issue. Because sometimes we want to tell people that we've been changed by Jesus when we haven't changed at all. We've been changed by Jesus, but we're just exactly the same as we used to be. We trust him, we follow him, we believe in him, but we're not changed. If you're not changed, then you haven't been what? It's pretty simple. Changed. Joseph and Nicodemus were changed. They acted differently than they had, because in the past, when it was maybe socially unacceptable to follow Jesus, when it was against the norms of culture, they shrank back and hid in the shadows, whether literally at night or figuratively by being secretly following Jesus. But now, when it becomes more than just socially unacceptable to follow Jesus, but they're trying to round up his disciples to kill them, they've certainly killed Jesus. Now, in that moment, they step out from the background and show that there's now been something different in them. See, they had been living in something. They had been living in total fear. I mean, John so much as tells us that with Joseph. He was secretly a follower of Jesus for fear of the Jews. Because he was afraid of the Jewish religious leaders, he secretly followed Jesus. He lived his life of following Jesus out of fear. But now in this moment, he doesn't live it out of fear. He lives it standing boldly, going to Pilate to ask if he can take the body of Jesus down. He's not coming at night after the body of Jesus is in the pit and pulls it out so that nobody knows it's him. He goes to the cross itself and takes Jesus down so that everyone who's there can see what he's doing. If you remember the passage before, it tells us that Jesus was crucified in a very public place where many people were passing. That's why they were so offended by Jesus having the sign above his head that said that he was the king of the Jews, because people were going to see it. So now Joseph and Nicodemus come to where they would be seen, and they take carefully Jesus' body down, living a life not out of fear any longer, but living a life without fear. How? How did they get there? That's the question I had to ask myself. What happened to these two to make it so that they would live not fearful of the Jews, but fearless in front of the Jews? It's a big question, because the Bible doesn't specifically tell us. I mean, listen to this passage again. After these things, Joseph of Arimathea, who was a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for fear of the Jews, asked Pilate that he might take the body of Jesus. And Pilate gave him permission. So he came and took away his body. Nicodemus also, who earlier had come to Jesus by night, came bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds in weight. So they took the body of Jesus and bound it in linen cloths with the spices, as is the burial custom of the Jews. Now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden was a new tomb in which no one had yet been laid. So because of the Jewish day of preparation, since the tomb was close at hand, they laid Jesus there. It doesn't tell us why. John does not tell us why the change happened or how the change happened, but the change is obviously there. He makes sure that we know that Joseph was afraid of the Jews, so he followed Jesus in secret. And he makes sure to tell us that Nicodemus didn't just come to Jesus, but came by night. In a time where the only lighting at night was the moon and fire. Not street lamps where people can still see what's going on. Not headlights. Torches and moonlight. And he makes sure that we know that he came at night. So we have to ask, how did this change happen? Back to my brother on the motorcycle. How did the change that took place in him actually happen? How did it happen that he no longer tried to push the limits of how far he could go and how fast he could go? How did it take place that he became the person he is instead of the person that he was? It happened very simply. See, he met a girl. Girls do a lot of things. He met a girl and they fell in love and they got married. And all of a sudden he realized he wanted to live with her more than he wanted to live life pushing the edge. He wanted to be with her and like her and the things that he was doing with her more than he wanted something else. And until you decide that you want this more than you want that, you're not going to change. So now, with Joseph and with Nicodemus, see, they had lived their life out of fear, afraid of what might happen to them should people find out what they really believed. We do that, you and me alike. We're afraid of what might happen if people found out just how much we were really into this Christianity bit. We're afraid of what they might think of us. We're afraid of what they might say about us. And so we live our life centered on ourselves, saying, what am I going to get or not get out of them finding this out? What am I going to get or not get by people knowing that I follow Jesus? Is it going to hurt me? Might it hurt my business? Might it hurt my job? Might it hurt my friendships? What am I going to lose? And that's the wrong question. Because the Bible doesn't care what you lose. God isn't here worried about what you might lose in following him. He's worried about what you might lose if you don't. And if we stop asking the question, what might I lose? And we start asking the question, what might Jesus gain? All of a sudden our fears won't just go away, but they will be trumped by something else. They'll be trumped by wanting to follow Jesus. They'll be trumped by wanting to honor him. They'll be trumped by wanting to follow him. Now, that's not just true for sharing your gospel or the gospel out there in the world to your friends. That's not really what I'm even talking about. People who I know who go out on the weekend and they get drunk, they do it answering the same question, what might I gain or what might I lose by going out and getting drunk? People who spend all of their free time chasing their own dreams ask themselves the same question, what might I gain? What am I going to get? People who obsess over whatever it is, they end up asking themselves the same question, what am I going to gain by doing this? So I'm going to wake up every morning and I'm going to hit the gym. So I'm going to wake up every morning and I'm going to get to work early so I can work more hours because I will gain money, because I will gain fitness, because I will gain health, because I will gain friends, because I will gain power, because I will gain something. And when you live your life asking and answering those questions, when you might lose something, you won't do whatever it is that you would otherwise do. If I ask my life, or the question of my life is, how can I gain friends, power, role, whatever it is, when I'm afraid I might lose that, then I will stop wanting to follow Jesus because he might take that away, or he might move me in a position where I could lose that. Joseph and Nicodemus, they didn't want to lose the stuff that they didn't want to lose. They didn't want to come to the end and find out that they had lost, for Nicodemus, position, for Joseph, wealth. Because if you read the other Gospels, he apparently is a very wealthy man. I think they didn't want to lose those things. Again, the Bible doesn't specifically say, but it does tell us and show us that there was a change from being filled with fear to being fearless. See, we're called to live that same life. The same life that moves forward saying, not what might I gain, but saying, what would Jesus gain out of X? What will he gain out of me living my life in such a way as to show the world around me that I follow him and only him? What would he gain out of that? What would he gain out of me giving, for me, my time and my funds to him? What would he gain out of me giving my energies to him? What would he gain out of me giving my effort, my desire, my thoughts to his purpose and his end? I can tell you what you will lose, because you will. You will likely lose money. You will likely lose power. You will likely lose the reputation of the world around you that says, oh, that's such a hardworking, strong, do-it-yourself sort of guy or gal. You will lose that. And we don't want to lose those things, I understand. We like those things. I like those things. But until I'm willing to lose those things, I'm not really following him. I'm following me when it comes right down to it. And that's why I'm scared to share the gospel with the people around me, even though I know I should in a certain moment. That's why I'm scared to tithe my money, because I don't have enough of it as it is. That's why I'm scared to give my efforts toward this end or that end. That's why I'm scared for me in the state in life that I'm in. That's why I get scared to not have my kids involved in sports. I want them involved. I like to see them involved. I like to see them succeed. And sometimes I sacrifice things I shouldn't for that. Because I'm asking the question, what will I gain? What will they gain? Instead of, what will God gain? See, we ask ourselves the wrong question. And when we ask ourselves the wrong question, we almost cannot end up at the right answer. I think these guys had been asking themselves the wrong question for a long time. That's why Joseph of Arimathea was scared. That's why Nicodemus came at night. But it seems that in this moment, they came back to a place where they asked themselves the right question. Just put yourself in their shoes for a moment. The person who you either openly or secretly follow, you want to know what he has to say. You want to know where he has to go. You will follow him wherever he's leading. You're just trying to stay in the shadows so that people don't know. He's just been publicly executed. And you know the leaders are coming for the rest of them. And now you've got a choice to make, whether to step out and take care of his body when nobody else is doing it. John, the disciple Jesus loved, was standing at his feet. He didn't take care of Jesus' body. His mother was there. She didn't take care of his body. So now they have the question to answer, will I take care of his body? Even though for up until this point, I have been a non-player, a non-follower of him. And now people are going to know. Am I willing to step out? Out of the shadows where people say, oh, that's just a nice person, to, oh, that's a follower of Jesus. Also keep in mind, they didn't have the resurrected Jesus to follow in this moment. They didn't have the Holy Spirit to give them power. They were Holy Spirit-less. And they were Jesus dead on a cross, followers of Jesus. In this darkest hour that they could possibly be in, they chose to care about and love and follow Jesus more than anything else. That's what we're called to do. To set all the rest aside and say, I care about him more. This will honor him more than it could possibly hurt me. This will lift him more than it will lower me. So then I will do it. And I will choose the things that maybe go against the grains of this world, or actually will go against the grain of this world, in order to be like him and follow him and prioritize him. And that's not really an option asked of us. That's a command given to us. So I have no idea if you've lived a life living out of fear up to this moment, or if you've lived a life completely free of fear, following Jesus with reckless abandon. Just so we're clear, there's no way you can follow him with enough reckless abandon. Everything you've got is worth giving to follow him. But I don't know where you've been. But this story of these two men is a story of two men who are full of fear and self-concern, changing to two men who are full of Jesus and concerned for him. That's what you're called to be. That's what I'm called to be. That's who we are expected to be. And that will span everything in your life, from sitting in this room to high school sports, to your job, to your family time, to your weekends out with your friends. It will span absolutely every moment of every day of every year of your life. Following him, chasing him, pursuing him, choosing him over you. That is what we're called to be. Let's pray. God, thank you for your son again. Thank you for giving us Jesus to be our only concern, our highest priority. Thank you for giving us him to be everything for us. Lord, if we've been people living out of fear, I pray that you show us how to change. Show us your spirit and your son, and allow us to see them and follow them and pursue them, and to then live lives that are free of fear for ourselves and full of fearlessness for you. We do love you. We thank you so much for sending your son, for giving us mercy, and giving us grace, and giving us so many things that we do not deserve. Amen.